Bloody Elbow presents Crooklyn's Corner, a hodgepodge of current event topics from the combat sports and entertainment community. Here is your host, Crooklyn, a.k.a. Steffi Haynes.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Crooklyn's Corner. I'm your host, Steffi Haynes. Some of you might still know me as Crooklyn or Crooklyn MMA from social media. And joining me today is a very special guest, one of my dearest, closest friends. Mr. Sean Sheehan is joining us all the way from Ireland. Sean, how the hell are you? It's been 4 months now since we last had you on, and I'm really excited about this.
Thank you very much for having me on. I'm delighted. I love guesting on podcasts, to be honest, because a lot of my stuff today, it's just me talking into a void myself or doing shows with other people where I have to come up with the questions and stuff. So it's good for someone else to come up with the questions for once. I can just roll in here unprepared and everything. It's absolutely fantastic. I love it. But I'm very well. Man United just won 3-2, so I'm absolutely delighted. We were 2-0 down at halftime, so it's, you caught me at a good time. I could have been very depressed right now, but I'm very happy. So you caught me at a good time, Steffi. It could have been a very different podcast we're about to record.
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Now, the reason why I wanted to get you on the show is because you are very, very well versed in the scoring criteria for the judges for MMA, and probably the most well-versed person in the space. You have a phenomenal video out, and I wanted to do this because I wanted to give you a chance to promote that and to give people that don't know you real well or don't know about that video or the fact that you're the authority on the scoring criteria, give them a chance to get to know you and get to listen to some of the questions I'm about to ask you regarding the scoring criteria. So are you ready to buckle down and talk technical stuff?
I'm ready. I've spent about the last 3 years preparing for this. I'm ready for battle. I've always, when there's a judging debate up, I always speak to judges, and they are way better than me, obviously. But they're always like, whenever they get into a battle with someone, they always have more knowledge than them and always win the battle. So that's what I want to get to now. So you can bring it. Bring it here. Let me have it.
Battle by any means. This is making sure that I get out there. This wonderful video that you have, and put you out there because people need to know that you're the guy to go to ask questions. And these days, when I have an opinion on something that differs from you as far as scoring, I automatically just abandon what I thought and just default to you. With the exception of one, and we'll get to that in a minute. And it's basically, it's just, it's personal choice, I think. But the first thing, you alluded to it here, you've prepared for this for 3 years. What made you start educating yourself so intensively on the scoring and judging criteria?
So it all started, I suppose, Paddy Pimblett fought Julian Arosa, and that was in 2015, 16-ish. I know it was in the autumn of one of the years anyway, and it was just before the rules changed to have the new criteria. So everything we speak about today happened kind of just after that. And that fight, it was on Cage Warriors. Everyone knows Paddy Pimblett now, obviously, but a lot of people wouldn't have known him then. But it was a big fight in this part of the world. And to me at the time, and to, I think, most people online who are listening to it, it looked like a robbery, right? And I'm not saying it is a robbery now. Go back again. I will be more careful what I say about it now. But I was saying it was a robbery online. Everyone was saying it. And there was a huge backlash after that fight. I haven't watched it back a few times. It's not as much. I still think I was correct in terms of who I thought won, but it wasn't as much as a robbery as I watched back. But so long story short, one of the judges on the fight, Ben Cartledge, and myself had a little bit of a back and forth that night, and he kind of had a go at me, rightly so, because I was kind of attacking him, and I was like, well, okay, let's move on. And I think I don't know, did I block him or muted him or something anyway, so we just moved on, and that was it. But about 4 or 5 months later, or maybe a little bit more even, Ben messaged me on Facebook, and he was like, he kind of said, I apologize for what I said, and I didn't, you know, I shouldn't have gone over the line. I'm not sure what he said, you know, I probably wasn't anything that bad anyway. So I was like, okay, no problem. And then we started talking, and I was like, I'd love to learn more about judging. So this is a world-class judge. If people don't know Ben Cartledge, he's judged thousands of fights. He's judged UFC championship fights, Bellator championship fights, Cage Warriors, KSW. He's the best judge in Europe. He's the only European judge to ever judge a fight in America. That's how good he is. So he took me under his wing, the right way to say it. But every time there was a decision, I went to him and I asked him his opinion. And then we got more and more into it about the judging criteria and the little intricacies. To me, he sent me the judging criteria, I'm sure, one day, and I went and read it. It's only 3.5 pages long. If you Google it, it's one of the first things that comes up, MMA judging criteria. Literally 3.5 pages long. And I think a lot of people, when they just see that, and your video you alluded to there is just basically me reading that. It's a 20-minute video, but you could literally read it in 5 minutes. I kind of explain in that video as well. But with that, you know, you have a great understanding of it. But what I've been doing for the last 3 or 4 years or whatever it is, with Ben really helping me, is and understanding why, you know, why these rules are there and how they work in practice over and over and over again. I've talked to Ben about hundreds and hundreds of fights, and a couple of other judges as well that have kind of seen my work and have kind of thanked me for it in a way, and I'm very happy when that happens. But I feel like, you know, I don't want to pat myself in the back or anything here, but I've put a lot of work into it, and I'm very proud of the work I put into it. And I feel like the reason why I'm so kind of hardy on talking about judging and so passionate about it is because the information to me is out there, right? It's really easily accessible. The intricacies of it are a little more nuanced, obviously, and a little bit more detailed in terms of how you explain them. But when I see people talking and they don't even have the very basics, it annoys me a little bit, and because of the frustration it is for the people sitting in that seat and for the fighters themselves, who I think would be a lot less annoyed or would be a lot less mad at judging if they truly understood it. So I actually think the biggest issue with judging, I'm sure maybe that's a question you'll ask me down the line, is just getting the knowledge out there. Once we get to a place where everyone has the knowledge, everyone understands that criteria, then we can talk about the problems with it. But that's basically what I've been doing for the last few years, just getting a really deep understanding of it from the people at the very top.
Give us a rundown of any changes to the criteria that may have happened over the last 3 or 4 years that you've been doing this.
Okay, so the big change, and to be honest, it's better just to explain maybe what we have at the moment rather than what we used to have. Because, look, very quickly, what we used to have, I suppose, is if you controlled the fight, we hear a lot about octagon control, a lot of the time you would win it. You know, wrestling meant an awful lot, top time meant an awful lot. That's not the case anymore. You know, there's three areas of the criteria at the moment. So there's effective grappling and striking is number one, both on the same. So if you get a really good submission or a really good punch, they're scored the same, you know, depending on how effective they are. A knockdown is probably more effective than and scores more than the submission you get out of. And one that breaks someone's arm that they get out of it will obviously score more than a jab or something like that. So that's one side of it. Then the next part is effective aggression, whereas, you know, if you're pushing the fight or, you know, you're trying to land strikes, you're aggressive. And then octagon control, where you're controlling the octagon without being aggressive, without landing any strikes. So those are the 3 points. The first point, scoring with punches and submissions. Next point, controlling with aggression. And next point, control with the octagon control, as they call it. So parts 2 and 3 do not score, do not matter, never score if there's one more punch landed or if there's one more submission maneuver put on. So they don't score. So if Francis Ngannou is fighting Cyril Gagne and nobody touches anyone for 5 rounds, and in Cyril Gagne lands a jab last second of the round, he wins that round. Doesn't matter if Francis Ngannou has thrown 1,000 punches and is pushing forward and is controlling the octagon and is way more aggressive. Literally, it doesn't matter if he throws 1,000 punches. He loses that round because this criteria is in a row. You know, it goes from first to third in that order. And if there's a difference there, two and three don't count. So that to me is the biggest change. That to me is what the judging criteria is today. And if we really, what we need to do here, right, is we need to be passionate in our adherence to that. Every fight we look at, every single fight we look at, we need to look at that. And I'm sure you'll ask me about 10-8s later on. And there's another part as well where every single fight, when we want to discover what a 10-8 is, there's something we look at for that as well. But for this, every single round, when we know, if you want to know how to score it, you do not look at octagon control. You do not look at aggression. You look at the effectiveness of the strikes and grappling. And when I say effectiveness, I mean effectiveness. If I land 100 strikes on Francis Ngannou and he lands one on me, who's more effective? He's one. So the striking stats do not matter. The amount of strikes you land do not matter. It is the effectiveness of those strikes. You literally, you could get up a strike stat and it could be 100-1. No, that's obviously a bit absurd. But if it's two very good fighters and one is a real hard hitter and he lands 10 strikes and the other guy lands 15 strikes, the guy who lands the 10 strikes absolutely could land that or could win that round because he landed the harder strikes. So that to me is the biggest change and the biggest thing to understand about the judging criteria the way we have it right now.
Is the criteria unified the way that the rules are or are supposed to be? And the reason I ask this is I want to know if criteria changes when fights are overseas, like, say, Fight Island or one of the places where the UFC acts as their own commission, et cetera, et cetera. Does that change the criteria any at all? And I know this is a noob question, but it's something I honestly don't know myself, and I was hoping you could settle that for me.
It's that's a tougher question to ask because everywhere in America aside from Texas, I would say yes. Everywhere in Europe, I would say yes as well. Out in Fight Island, it's a lot. I'm pretty sure it's the UFC out there, you know, with the Mark Ratner and stuff doing that. That's the exact same criteria. So it's the same everywhere. I did a story before I even started, you know, talking to Big Gartledge and getting into the judging about the criteria because, you know, when the criteria changed around that time 4 years ago or whenever it was, 5 years ago now at this stage, there was a lot of talk about whether Las Vegas would be doing it. So I did a story and I contacted Las Vegas. I contacted New Jersey. I contacted California. I contacted Texas and asked them all, what criteria will you be using? And that story probably could be a bit better today because maybe I'd let a little bit of less of a knowledge. But the big point about it is Las Vegas at the time had to wait a while to bring it in because, someone in America would be able to explain this better than me. But the Las Vegas or the Nevada State Athletic Commission is part of the government, basically. So if they have to change a rule, it has to go through legislation or whatever it is. Now, it's there now. So the judging criteria in New York and Las Vegas or in California, it's the same, exact same. In Texas, but also with that said as well, it's up to the commission to decide that. Just all the commissions are unified. In Texas, and we'll get to Texas first. So I contacted them at the time, and they told me that they would not be changing the criteria. They would not be looking at the 3Ds for deciding 10-8s and going to have more 10-8s. And I think they have done that a little bit. But the big thing and the big issue with Texas is they have their own guys in there, basically. You know, people who might judge a fight once a year when the UFC come, and maybe, you know, the local Texas Baron fights on a Thursday night in fucking San Antonio or somewhere. You know, these guys haven't a clue what they're doing. So that's, to me, is a bigger issue in Texas. And I don't know. You could ask the judges this. It might be better than me. But I'm sure those judges go in and told by the commission to judge this specific way, they will judge the way everyone judges and everywhere judges. So that would be the answer to that question for me. But worldwide, it is the same. Now, I think, is it 1FC? They have a different judging criteria. They judge the fight as a whole and stuff like that. So that's a little bit different. All right. But in Las Vegas, one big point as well. After the, Amanda Nunes fought. Who did Amanda Nunes fight at 145 last? I can't think of her name.
Felicia Spencer.
Yes, that fight. So Amanda Nunes dominated lots of rounds in that fight. And if you remember after it, Dana White came out and he was like, why wasn't there 10-8s? Why wasn't there more 10-8s and everything like that? I'm sure we'll talk about 10-8s. and he put lots of pressure on the Nevada State Athletic Commission for a fight that Amanda Nunes walked away with. That didn't really matter. And since then, other people have reported this, but I've heard it behind the scenes as well, that there has been a directive sent out by the Nevada State Athletic Commission to judge 10-8 a little bit differently and not go by the exact criteria we have. Remember, people used to always talk about scoring more liberal 10-8s. Now, that's not a thing that was worded. That's not a thing a judge would ever say. But it kind of, the rules that changed and the rules that we had led to more liberal 10-8s. What the UFC, or what the commission has basically done because of Dana White's complaints, is backtracked on that. And in Nevada now, you will not see 10-8s as liberally as you would in other jurisdictions in America. So that's one part that I would definitely be looking out for going forward. Now, that needs to change. Judges are not happy about that. Nobody is happy about that. And hopefully, I think there was a judging meeting there a couple of weeks ago, and where there was things voted on. Hopefully that will change soon. But at the moment, that's the way it is. But to answer your question, mostly it's the same all over America, all over, you know, where the UFC goes, where Bellator goes. ONE FC might be a little bit different, but yeah, that it is the same most places.
Now, you already guessed that I was going to ask you about 10-8 scoring, so lay it down for us, and then I'm going to ask you a follow-up to that.
Okay, right, so 10-8. If it comes to the end of the round, right, and you're thinking, right, okay, that was close. Now, was that a 10-8 or was that a 10-9? And you're thinking, what are the things that help me decide if it's a 10-8 or not? So there's three things, right? And they're the three Ds: damage, duration, and dominance. Okay? So damage, obviously the amount of strikes landed or the amount of effective offense that someone lands, effective striking or grappling. Duration is the amount of time they do it, and dominance is like how dominant they were. So if you have all three of those, so if you, let's say you take someone down, you'll spend 5 minutes on top of them, you have the dominance, in a dominant position, you have the dominance, you have the duration, and then you land a 1,000 strikes on them, they're all bloodied up and everything, maybe not 1,000, because then you're version on 10-7, but however, you know what I mean, land loads of strikes, that is a 10-8 every day of the week, because you have all three things. So you get to the end of that round to go, is the damage there? Tick. Is the dominance there? Tick. Is the duration there? Tick. That's a 10-8 every time. If you have two of those things, you think about it. The judge has to assess it. The judge says to himself or herself, is there enough damage? Is there enough dominance? Is there enough duration on top to give that 10-8? So they have to ask themselves that question and judge it. You know, judge is the name of the person who does the job, but judge is also a verb. You're sitting there having spent thousands of hours practicing how you do this and done hundreds or maybe thousands of fights to be able to judge or sit there to decide whether it's a 10-8 or a 10-9 and to know based on past fights and this fight itself in the heat of the battle whether it is a 10-8 or 10-9. So that's your job to do it. And that's the part where I talk about all those intricacies that I learned speaking about different fights. So the one thing I would say in that is that damage is the most important thing. If you, let's say you have dominance and you have the duration, it's not necessarily going to be a 10-8 because maybe someone takes someone down, spends 5 minutes on top and lands, you know, 3 or 4 punches, maybe 10 punches, doesn't do any real damage. They're going to win the round, okay. But do they deserve a 10-8 for not doing much damage to their opponent? I would argue no. And then if you land, say, 100 punches in the same and cut them open and land a big elbow, do you deserve a 10-18, I would say yes. So that's where you consider it. You either say that yes or that no in there. And then if you've only one of those, you can consider it as well. You know, if someone has a dominant round and they maybe don't have the damage or they don't have maybe the duration, you can consider it there. Or if they just have the damage, like someone could lose the round for, you know, 4.5 minutes and then do a whole load of damage in 30 seconds, knock them down 3 times, hurt them really badly. And then you ask yourself, ooh, okay, well, we don't have the dominance, we don't have the duration, but we have that damage and that's big damage. So you can ask yourself, is it a 10-8 there? So that's, again, where you leave it to the judge to judge it. So that's where you get 10-8s from. If you get to the end of the round and they say, right, there wasn't that much damage, didn't really dominate, I would say, and didn't really have the duration of the whole round dominate, and then that's a 10-9. You know, it's not a 10-8. So those are the three things you need to ask yourself at the end of 3 Ds: damage, duration, dominance, and then you decide from there.
Okay. Now, here's my question about that. What if you have two of the Ds? What if you have the dominance and duration for 4.5 minutes of a round and you don't have as much damage? Do those two Ds equal the one?
Well, they can. That's when you have two Ds, you consider it. Mm-hmm. So, it as I mentioned, that is where the judging being a verb. Like, if you're a judge and you've been there for a long, long time and you've watched a whole load of other rounds. So, let's say someone like a John Fitch, right? He used to spend a whole load of time on top but didn't really land that much. You know, you would think, okay, a John Fitch type of performance was probably not going to warrant a 10-8, even though it has the two of the three Ds, you know? But then a Khabib Nurmagomedov performance where you mightn't have too much damage, but you have a lot of duration, you have a lot of dominance, maybe that does warrant a 10-8. But as I said again, the damage one is the most important. It's always going to be. Like, MMA, when you're scoring I talked at the very start of this about the tertiary scoring criteria. The first one of that is effective grappling and striking. That's damage. You know, that is the most important thing. We always have to remember, MMA is an offensive sport. You don't get points for defense, but you get a lot of points. You get a lot of scoring for offense. And if you have effective offense and, you know, you can do it dominantly for a long period in the round, you're going to get a 10-8 for it and you're going to get points for it. So, I would say it depends. You know, your question, like, if you have only two of them, it depends. The only time we can be certain about it is when you have all three. And a big point here as well I make, and this is broader than just the 10-8, but also concerns the 10-8 as well. Judging cannot be a perfect science just because of what we exactly discussed there, because you have to decide whether it's a 10-8 or not. And one judge might think it is, one judge might think there's enough damage, and another judge maybe sitting at the other side of the cage who doesn't see the punches at the exact right angle, or is maybe the referee standing in front of him and he just doesn't get a glimpse of it. Maybe he doesn't think that one punch landed, maybe think it's a slip or something, and it's, you know, it's not a 10-8. But what we have to do is understand that, you know, we have to understand what someone's score would be. You're going to bring up a round later on, and I'm sure you scored a 10-9 and I scored a 10-8, and maybe you'd be able to understand why I scored a 10-9, and maybe I'd be able to understand why you scored a 10-9 the other way. But will we agree on it? Probably not. But that is okay. We have to reconcile that. When we're talking about judging, right, there is, and people probably say, throw out this judging criteria, get a new one. Let's do that. Absolutely no problem if you want to do that. Show me a better one first, and then show me a one that will have no disagreements. And you know what I'll show you then? Cloud Cuckoo Land, because that does not exist. It will never, ever, ever, ever exist. There is no criteria out there and never will be, unless the only criteria out there is fight to a finish. That's the only way we're going to have agreement on who won a round or who won a fight. It's not possible. So we have to reconcile ourselves with that at the start, and then we also have to realize that there can be a disagreement here. As long as we understand, it's fine. If I watch a fight and I see a round and I think there's absolutely no way fighter B could have won that 10-9, and that one judge gives it to fighter B 10-9, then I'm like, well, that's terrible judging. That's awful judging. But if I think fighter A won 10-9 and I think maybe it was close and another judge scores it for fighter B 10-9, well, then I can't criticize them too much. No, I can understand. I don't agree, but I understand.
All right. So we're gonna examine a possibility here of a disagreement. The judges scored round two of Mackenzie Dern versus Marina Rodriguez a 10-9 rather than a 10-8. And you, quite famously or infamously, agreed with them. You also scored it a 10-9 rather than a 10-8. Why? I don't understand, but I sort of have to default to your judgment on this because you know judging criteria much better than me. So she dominated, she had the duration, and she had the more effective grappling. So why no 10-8 there?
Okay. I think this comes down to what effective grappling is. Because effective grappling is one of those ones. A takedown is not effective grappling, right? A pass is not effective grappling. Now, when I say that, people, there's probably jiu-jitsu nuts listening to me and go, what the fuck is this fat idiot talking about? And you're dead right if you say that, right? In every aspect of that sentence. you're dead right. But when we're talking about the scoring criteria, it's not effective. Now, it's good grappling. It's good to get you into a certain position. But the position is only effective and only scores highly with what you do with it. Did Mackenzie Dern have a submission on at any time in that round? No? Did she? Can you answer me that? Did she have, like, was she almost finishing Rodriguez at any time in that round?
Not really, no.
No, no. So it wasn't effective grappling. Like, effective striking is when you're almost finishing someone and you're badly hurting them. You know, that's what effective striking and effective grappling are. It's something that pushes towards the end of the fight. I know sometimes we look at effective grappling and we might think it's harder to actually see than effective striking. I think it's easier because it's harder to get. But it's easier to see because if there's a fight we're going to come to later, Brian Ortega versus Volkanovski, those two submissions that he was caught in, that Volkanovski was caught in. Now that is effective grappling.
Okay.
John Jones versus Vitor Belfort when he almost broke his arm. That's effective grappling. That scores highly. If Mackenzie Dern got a Vitor Belfort armbar that John Jones was caught in, she would have won that round 10-9 probably, or 10-8, sorry, because she had that effective grappling. Just laying on top of someone and just moving into their moving out of their guard into side control and all that, that's really good, and that's good mixed martial arts, but it's not good scoring mixed martial arts. It leads you to a point where you can score more. Like, you're more likely to get a 10-8 from the mount than you are from the guard, so it is effective in that way in terms of the MMA game, but in terms of MMA judging, not so much. And it's the same on the feet. It's not just that. Like, if Conor McGregor stands orthodox for the whole fight, it just because he changes to southpaw doesn't mean he should get a point for that. Just because he changes to an area where he's going to be more effective in. If he lands the left hand and knocks someone down, then he gets points for it because he uses that better position to in an effective way. So it's the same with grappling. If Mackenzie Dern, I always talk about the position of side control and half guard. Like, I bet you a lot of jiu-jitsu people, maybe they wouldn't, but they would probably argue, and a lot of people would argue, that side control is a better position than half guard because you have passed out of half guard in there. I actually think half guard is a way better position. Look at Habib, what he does from half guard. Mm-hmm. You can control way better and land a lot more shots from half guard. When you're in side control, someone can move. So when we talk about just the effective position, why should it score more? Why should you score for just moving to a position when you can argue that a position might be less effective than another? Look at the mount even. And this is an absurd one as well. But look at Alexei Oleinik. He wants you to mount him. You know, yeah. That's not a very effective position if you're on top of Alexei Oleinik, is it? So you can get finished by him if you're in that position. So it's what you do with that position. Now, if you get on top of Alexei Oleinik and you land 15 elbows, then it's a very effective position and maybe you will win that round 10-8. So that's it. It's the use of the position and what you do from the position rather than the position itself, I would say.
See, people fall in love with quick scrambles and positional grappling, and I think that's where the disconnect happens.
I love it. Like, I love that part of MMA. And, you know, a lot of people have asked me, has it kind of ruined MMA a little bit for you talking about judging? And it has in certain ways. You watch fights in a very different way when you watch in a purely judging way. But I try sometimes not to do that as well. But yeah, and I absolutely understand people when they do it like that. Like, if you're a coach and you're listening to this, you're probably going mad listening to me because you probably don't want your fighters listening to this and thinking, right, well, I need them to move in this direction to get to this point, to do the right thing, and I need them to believe that this position is better than that position, and that's good coaching. They absolutely should do that, but I'm talking about judging all alone, and that's the reality of judging. And sometimes the reality of judging is different from the reality of the best way to coach someone in a fight. And now there, we can have another argument maybe about that, about how judging maybe needs to be changed, and maybe it needs to favor certain things more than others, but at the moment that's what we have.
What are your thoughts on open scoring?
I absolutely hate it. I couldn't hate it anymore.
We're on the same page.
Yeah. So, like, I think the biggest part here, and I look, everyone listening to the last half an hour here probably knows I'm on the judging side of it more than anything else. But if... Right, so what we want, and I mentioned it with Texas earlier on, is about judges who are not that experienced, not just in terms of how many fights they've judged, but in terms of their understanding of the criteria and the real intricacies of it. That is huge, right? It takes a lot to do that. And do you know what it takes? It takes a passion, and it takes a want to do it, because you're not getting paid a lot of money to do that. Believe me, you're not getting paid. You have to probably go to fucking bingo halls in the middle of fucking Westchester and get 100 fights before you get, you know, to on a you know, an LFA card, and before you get to a Bellator card and a UFC card. It takes years upon years upon years. And you know what you want? You want those people in the jobs, and you want the people who are willing to do that and who are good at it and have shown a track record and who have proven they can do it to do it. Do you know what you don't want to do? You don't want to dissuade those people from doing it, because they get, you know, a Khabib Nurmagomedov fight in Russia, and then they read out that Sean Sheehan has scored a 10-9 for Tony Ferguson, and the whole crowd is roaring at you, and they're jumping over the fence to come at you, or, you know, Stipe Miocic in Cleveland, or, you know, anyone, wherever it might be. Do you really, really want that? Like, people think that open scoring is going to change judging. The open scoring is going to do absolutely nothing for the criteria. Only pressure the people who are judging these fights. We want these people to have, we want them in, you know, people are always talking about putting them in a pod so they can't hear anyone. That's what, you know, that'd be great, but they need to hear the thump of the punch or whatever it might be. Do we really want to put extra pressure on them? Remember that time last year, right? Or 2 years ago, maybe now it was, where Joe Rogan thought that a referee was looking at his phone from cage side. Remember, everyone went mad about it. And it turns out it wasn't, or sorry, a judge. It turns out it wasn't a judge. It was one of the commission people, or it was a notebook maybe, or whatever it might have been, right? And why did everyone get mad about that, right? The reason everyone got mad about that was because we felt like the person wasn't paying attention to the fight, that they were distracted and they weren't watching the fight. What's going to happen if there's fucking 15,000 mad Irishmen behind you and James Gallagher's fighting and you're after scoring a 10-9 for Patchy Mix? What's going to happen then? Do you think that's not going to be distracting? Do you think that's going to lead to better judging? I certainly don't. And also, a big thing is, you heard Corey Sandhagen on the MMA or with Ariel there a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, oh, they have in NFL and in basketball towards the end of games where they, you know, where they can kneel on the ball and spin the last 2 minutes. As a non-American, I hate that more than anything in sports, where you can just waste the last 2 minutes of a game when there might only be two scores or one score between it. That is, if you designed a game like that right now and you suggested that, you'd probably be slapped around the head and told to never fucking come to another meeting again, you know. And we want to bring that into MMA, where that's an actual part of MMA. There was a fight there at the weekend, Tim Elliott, where he thought he was two rounds ahead, and he decided to coast in the third. You know, he ended up, okay, because he didn't know the judge. A lot of people use that as a way to call for open scoring, right? I use it as a way to give an example. Imagine if he was up two rounds and then he coasted in the third. How many fights per night would you want a person to know they're up two rounds and to coast in the third? MMA is an offensive sport. I said it earlier on. It should always be an offensive sport. And you know what? It's becoming a less offensive sport because of how good it is these days. MMA has never been better in terms of tactics and technique and everything like that. But it's led to a more even and a less exciting sport. You bring in open scoring and you're going to make it less exciting. Without a shadow of a doubt, you're going to take away good judges. People are going to say, I'm never going to bother doing this again. Why should I bother? I'm not getting paid hardly any money for this. There is no good side to open scoring at all. I really, really do not like it. Like, okay, it's been tested, and people have asked boxing people what they think about open scoring. You know, if you know a boxing person on Twitter, if you don't watch much boxing, ask a boxing person what they think about open scoring and then come back to me.
And that is where I stand. That is why I don't like it, is because I come from boxing. So let's talk about Volkanovski and Holloway's two fights, because lots of folks think that Holloway won those fights, especially the second one. But Volkanovski clearly took them. He remains the champion. What are your thoughts on that pair of fights?
I can't remember them. I have the worst memory. As you can probably hear, I spend every week going with a fine tooth comb through all of these fights and really looking at them. And honestly, you asked me the question there about Mackenzie Dern, and I was like, "What in God's name happened in that round? That fight happened 10 days ago, and I barely remember." Honestly, I'd have to go back and watch both of those fights. But from what I remember, there were two very close fights. Mm-hmm. You know, there's fights like those, right? There's some fights that it's easy to kind of explain why one fighter gets it over. Like, let's say Max Holloway takes down Volkanovski, right? And he just wrestles him for four rounds. Volkanovski doesn't land much. Holloway lands a bit, right? And then the fight gets up, and then Volkanovski lands three hard punches. Well, for me, I would score that for Volkanovski, right? And a lot of people would probably be mad and go, Max Holloway dominated that fight for 4 minutes. But if we go back to our criteria, look at effective grappling and striking, who had that? It's Volkanovski, right? So that'd be fine. That's explainable. What happened in a lot of those rounds, in those 10 rounds of those two fights, was that Volkanovski landed 12 punches, Max Holloway landed 12 punches, and then the judges, they're sitting at the end of the round and they have 5 seconds to decide which side they're right 9 to and which side they're right 10 to. And that is the nightmare for a judge. Mm-hmm. That is like, well, what am I going to do with that? That's it. That is where, and that is why you need the best judges in the world. That is why you need, you know, the likes of Ben Cartledge, the likes of Brian Miner, the likes of Eric Cologne and other people like that, David Letheby. That's why you need those sort of judges that have been doing it for a long time to be the person writing down 9 either on the left-hand side or the right-hand side and 10 vice versa. That's why you need those. And we are going to get fights. Like, the people listening to this are probably thinking as well, like, for that, why do we go with this criteria? Why it's a 10-9 must system? There is no system that can decide a close round like that. None. If you want to go to a system where it's decided on punches alone, by all means do it. But you know what that is? That's a stupid fucking system. Because people who are just outpointing someone and they're just be jabbing them to the body and running away are going to win the fight. We want this. I'll say it again. We want MMA to be a more offensive sport. And now, I'm not saying that happened in Volkanovski versus Holloway. But in that fight, what we did have was a lot of very close rounds and a lot of very close strikes that a judge has to go in there and decide between something that is really hard to decide between, you know. And maybe people will argue for 10 rounds, but in the criteria, it's written as well, very rarely you must decide. A 10-10 round is not an out for a judge. It's there for a very specific thing. And if you see anyone tweeting at the end of a round that it's a 10-10, they're wrong. And that's simply it. It's written in the criteria. So that is the thing about Volkanovski and Holloway. Such close rounds. And it is the perfect example for understanding rather than agreement. Like, there's lots of rounds there that I could score 10-9, you could score 9-10. And we would disagree, but I could understand you and you could understand me. And that's all we can ask for, I think, with close rounds, because there is no way around it. There is just no way. Like, if Volkanovski punches Holloway once and Holloway punches Volkanovski once, or if I said it wrong there, you know what I mean? They punch each other both once. Who punches harder, right? That's a very, 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 very hard thing to decide. Nobody can decide that. Even if you ask the two lads, they'd probably lie to you, and you couldn't decide it even from them. And you're asking a judge to decide that. That's what it comes down to. So, yeah, I think we just have to understand it. Not always agree, but understand.
Yeah, very subjective for sure. Staying on the track with Alexander Volkanovski, this is just a personal question. Did you find round 3 of Volkanovski Ortega the greatest round of a title fight ever?
It was up there. As I said, again, my memory isn't great for especially all fights, but I remember that one, as you reminded me. It was insane. Like, I'm watching the fights here at 5 o'clock in the morning or whenever that was on, and it's not often that I jump out of my chair. You know, it's really not often. I remember certain fights, like Chris Weidman, Anderson Silva. I remember I was watching it in bed and I literally hopped out of bed and shouted at like 6 o'clock in the morning. It was one of the most insane things I've ever seen. And that was one of those rounds, you know, our Aldo versus McGregor. You jump up and it's, I remember glasses went flying and there was water all over the floor and everything. It just insane. But that was one of those ones where I was up and I was like getting closer and closer to the TV all the time. I was like, is this really? And it was, you know, it was like AC got to pull it out of the bag. It was absolutely insane. And Joe, for talking about it from a judging point of view as well, what an absolute nightmare for a judge. Like, because in that moment, the judge has to not be thinking of, oh, is this going to be finished? Is this the most exciting round of all time? Is this the best fight of the night? Are they going to get 50? They're not thinking about that. They're thinking, how close is this choke? How effective is this grappling? Is this worth more than the strikes that Ortega landed earlier, or that Volkanovski landed earlier in the round and all of that? So for them, it's a bit sad, unfortunately, for them. But for me, watching it at home, that is the round where I have to like, oh, well, okay, I guess I'm not judging that one live. I go back and I'll watch it tomorrow. But I kind of did live as well, I suppose, because I'm used to it. But crazy, crazy, crazy one. There's nothing like, you know, great knockouts and great, you know, punches and finishes like that are fantastic. But I think there's nothing in MMA like, you know, like John Jones being caught by Vitor, as I mentioned earlier, or like Anderson Silva catching Chael. Someone being caught in a submission just when you don't expect it. You know, I absolutely love that. It's always been one of my favorite things in MMA. And that was all. It wasn't it. It was almost it, but it was absolutely fantastic.
Ever had moments where a second viewing of a fight changed your mind on your initial score?
It's definitely happened a few times. Look, and I think most of that is because I'm watching fights at 6 o'clock in the morning. I might be a bit tired, and you know, there was what fight was it? It was a fight. I remember I went down to with Aaron Bronsetter on his podcast and talked about it, and it was Adesanya Blachowicz. So when I was watching that live, I had it for Blachowicz. I think I had it 3-2, but when I went back and I watched it again, I'm pretty sure I had it 5-0 for Blachowicz. I think it was one of those where Adesanya just didn't land enough in that fight. It was, look, a lot of those rounds were very close as well because there wasn't that much landed. But yeah, I've definitely watched, look, there's a lot of fights where round one, fighter A wins it handily. Round two, fighter B wins it handily. Round three, it's a toss-up. And those fights, you can go back and you can watch them, you know, two or three times, and you might decide a different winner every time, you know. So yeah, it happens all the time, and that's it again about the, you know, the signs of kind of understanding rather than agreeing.
One final question here, and this is completely off topic, but I had to get this in. Tell me the fights and or fight cards you're looking forward to most to round out 2021.
I suppose the fight card I'm most looking forward to is Bellator Dublin, because I'm going to be at it, and it's the first time I've been at an event since Bellator Dublin in I think March of 2020. So it's give or take 4 months. It's 2 years. So it's been a long, long, long time, and I've missed it so much, to be honest. I was really getting into going to events and all, because there's more events in Ireland. So to be able to go to that, you know, there's an Irish man, a Munster man as well, fighting for a world championship against Patricky Pitbull, and James Galler's fighting Patchy Mix, and there's some really good fights. So that, me, for me personally, is the one I'm looking forward to. But there, you know, there's some very good fights coming up. You mentioned Max Holloway there. He's fighting Yair Rodriguez. That's a fight that really, really sticks out to me. What an absolutely brilliant fight that is. I love Max Holloway. He's brilliant, and I love Yair Rodriguez's style. That should be fantastic. And look, the two UFC 267 and 268 are absolutely fantastic as well. Like Blachowicz versus Teixeira, I genuinely think Glover Teixeira might be the most underrated fighter in the UFC in the last 4 or 5 years. He's just such a brilliant fighter, and that's going to be it might be fight of the year candidate, but it's going to be two tough bastards going in there, locking jaws, fucking smashing the heads off each other, and I can't wait for that. And you've Sandhagen and Yan before that. What a fight that is. Hook Volkov and Makachev, your boy Jing Liang against Shamayev. It'll be interesting to see what Shamayev looks like. That's absolutely fantastic. And in the week after, we've only a week to wait, Colby Covington against Usman. What a fight that is again. That fight disappointed me a little bit the first time, even though it was a great fight. I hope they both fight a little bit differently and we have a different fight and we have a great fight. But, the rematch as well, Nami Yunus versus Weili, Gaethje versus Chandler, Frankie Edgar against Vera. That's a fantastic card. So, and Ian Garry as well. If people don't know Ian Garry, he's fighting on that card in MSG, UFC 268. I interviewed him for Sherdog. This guy is the next Irish superstar. I guarantee you, this guy is going to be the next Irish fighter who's ranked. This guy is going to be the next Irish fighter who fights for a UFC title. This guy is a different level. He is brilliant. So watch out for him on the undercard of UFC 268.
All right. Well, I learned about Ian Garry from you, so I feel like I've got the leg up on everybody else that doesn't really know him yet. So I thank you for that. And I thank you for your time here and explaining some of the finer details of MMA judging. What I want to do for you right now is give you a moment and tell everybody about the video, where they can find it, all your work, your social media. The floor is yours, sir.
Okay, thank you, Sophie. I appreciate it. You can find that the judging video where I basically go through the criteria of fine tooth comb. It's on my Twitter at Sean Sheehan BA. I have it pinned to the top, so whenever you go there, you'll be able to find it. It's on YouTube, so it's handy out there. I have about 1,000 podcasts a week now as well. I started working for Sherdog last week, so I have 3 podcasts every week for Sherdog. I'll be previewing an event. I will be doing a betting show and either an interview or I must get you on, Steffi, to have a chat about something. I have my own. I have the floor is mine. I have a Sheehan show every week to talk about whatever I want. So it's absolutely fantastic. And then with Severe and May as well, I have the podcast every Sunday, about an hour, just talking, independent journalism. I can do what I want, say what I want. It's absolutely fantastic. And then with the Patreon as well, patreon.com/SevereMMApodcast. I have a Q&A every Tuesday. We have a new show starting. It's called The Contender, where myself and Ian O'Neill, one of the guys working over there, look at someone, say like a Leon Edwards or like a Cyril Gagne who's next up or maybe in a couple of fights away from fighting for the title. That comes out the next couple of Thursdays anyway, and maybe every Thursday going forward. And we have another show called Speaker's Corner as well with myself and Harry Powell, which is just the inner workings kind of MMA, or the kind of the conversations maybe a lot of people aren't having, like the one we've just had now, are about like how someone gets into MMA or what's the best meta game for MMA. And that comes out on a Wednesday. So I have loads of podcasts all the time. The Patreon, I've gone full time now as well, so I'm covering MMA full time. I can finally call myself a journalist maybe after about 10 years, and you were the first one to put me on a podcast, so without you, everyone can blame you, Steffi. Everyone can blame you for hearing me non-stop. So I really appreciate everything you've done for me down through the years, and I appreciate your support.
Oh, well, you know what? You're family to me, and you have been for, 12 years now? So, I mean, I'm just honored that you mentioned me. Thank you so much. And, folks, there you have it. Sean Sheehan. Find him on Twitter. That's Sean Sheehan BA, like badass. So, check him out. And until next time, please stay safe.
Thank you for listening to this Bloody Elbow Presents production. To check out more of our content, hop over to the Bloody Elbow Presents SoundCloud and iTunes pages, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is also titled Bloody Elbow Presents. We're also on Apple TV, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Player FM, and Amazon Music. Just search for Bloody Elbow Presents, and you'll get brand new shows throughout the week, including Care Don't Care, The Mookie and Crookie Show, the best of the Come On Now MMA podcast, Crooklyn's Corner, the MMA Vivisection, the Level Change podcast, Show Money, the Sixth Round Post Fight Show, Sixth Round Retro, the MMA Depressed Us, and Radio Style Play by Play for every UFC pay per view. You can also follow us on Twitter at Bloody Elbow and on Facebook at facebook.com/Bloody Elbow Blog, and of course on BloodyElbow.com.